sometimes the term complaints policy can kind of be a little bit of a barrier for us. I mean, at the end of the day, scripture tells us, do all things without grumbling or disputing and, endure all things. But of course, that's not the only message that scripture gives us. The other message that scripture gives us is that we're to listen well, we're to encourage one another, and we need to listen well. And so if the term complaint policy sort of gets in the way, think of it about how do we listen to each other well? How do we respond to each other well?
Welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name's Phil Topham, Executive Director of the FIEC. And joining me today, I've got two people. I've got Adrian Reynolds, our Head of National Ministries. Good morning, Adrian.
Hello, although I'm not here in my capacity.
I was going to say that. So you're
here. Have I stolen your thunder?
Well, you have, but I don't mind. Okay. So you are here as a leader of a local church.
That's right.
To talk about what we're talking about this morning. And we're talking this morning about complaints that are received by churches. And with us as well is Paul Harris. Paul, just tell us who you are and who you work for.
Yeah, so I'm Paul Harrison. I am a leader in an FIEC church, but I'm also involved with Christian Safeguarding Services.
So Christian Safeguarding Services is one of the safeguarding providers that we recommend to churches, and Paul is here in that capacity.
From here on, we're going to call it CSS.
CSS,
just
yeah.
For the purpose
just
of brevity.
Just to be clear, that's absolutely
yeah.
right.
Otherwise, the podcast will be 58 minutes
long. It will. And you've not heard how long Paul can speak for yet, so that might absolutely Absolutely be true. We've done the training, Paul. Well, what we're doing this morning is we want to talk about something that FIEC have asked CSS to commission for us, which is a complaints policy for churches to adopt. Now, before you switch off and groan, I want to start by asking you, Paul, why is it important for churches to consider a complaints policy? This is, of course, separate to safeguarding policy, employment policies. What is a complaints policy and why should churches consider it necessary?
Sure. I want to come from a couple of angles really in answering that question. I suppose the boring one, so let's get that one out the way to start off with, is because it's required. The Charity Commission are very clear that as charities we need to be listening to concerns that are raised with us. Now, that is a simple fact. But more importantly, I think we need a complaints policy because I think biblically, we need to listen well to each other. I realize that sometimes the term complaints policy can kind of be a little bit of a barrier for us. I mean, at the end of the day, scripture tells us do all things without grumbling or disputing and, endure all things. But of course, that's not the only message that scripture gives us. The other message that scripture gives us is that we're to listen well, we're to encourage one another, and we need to listen well. And so if the term complaints policy sort of gets in the way, think of it about how do we listen to each other well? How do we respond to each other well? How do we deal with problems that come along?
Paul, that's really helpful.
Sorry, can I ask a question about that? Because I've immediately got my questions.
Yeah.
And I hope you don't mind me asking questions, Paul.
So Adrian, you're an elder in a local church.
I'm an elder.
You're going to receive this
from
FIEC.
Got an elders meeting this afternoon,
We're
always feel, like lots of elders that we're operating at the edge. Never have quite enough time to do all the things we want to do. And so I want to do things properly and I want to understand as well why we're doing them, because to create time and space and energy for things is not straightforward, frankly, in any church, I guess. So can I just go back to the Charity Commission? We're registered charities. So is it a Charity Commission requirement to have a complaints policy or actually to have... Is the principle broader than that, and the complaints policy is one way of fulfilling that?
So the Charity Commission will say to you that you need to have a complaints policy.
Right.
Now, as with all of this stuff, so long as we cover that in some way,
right.
So long as we have a way of listening well, if we have it in a different policy, so for example, you might choose to have a listening well policy that covers complaints and allegations and whistleblowing. So it's not that you have to have a piece of paper that says complaints policy.
That's really helpful.
But we do have to have the processes in place. Yeah.
Well, can a church not just say, well, Matthew 18, there's our complaints policy?
Yeah, we can do. And in many ways, the policy sort of assumes that. When you look at the policy, what you'll see is that there are three stages. And the first is an informal resolution, which is very much that Matthew 18 principle. I think the Matthew 18 principle clearly is important for us as churches. However, I think that there is an overstatement of the Matthew 18 principle in the current climate. And what I mean by that is the Matthew 18 principle is not all-inclusive. It's not the only thing that Scripture has to say about how we deal with disagreements amongst ourselves. And certainly the notion, for example, and I know this is an extreme example, but it's not entirely out of the realms of possibility in what has happened. If someone has been seriously harmed by a leader, to then say, well, of course, the course of action that you have is to go to that leader and address it with them, it is re-traumatizing. And I would argue it is unbiblical when we are talking at a particular level. I'm not talking here about, you know, we've got a disagreement, you know, about a particular statement in a sermon or whatever it may be. But where we're talking about real harm, you know, Scripture doesn't say that we should do that. Scripture says that we should stand up for the rights of those who are oppressed and those who are weak and who are not able to defend themselves.
Has there been a confusion of Matthew 18 and 1 Timothy 5 then, based on what you've just said?
I think there is. And I think that there are many principles here. As an organization, we're very keen that we think everything through from a biblical perspective. And I think there are many principles here that we need to think through. There's the sort of whole concept of denying justice to the vulnerable. There's the responsibilities of leaders to care for the flock. One of the things that I often go back to is in Israel, we had that threefold office, the prophet, the priest, the king. And those worked to provide accountability to each other. And we see, for example, Nathan challenging David and these kinds of things. And I think what we've tended to do as churches is look at this in a very narrow way, whereas actually what we need to do is broaden out and say, how do we deal with difficulties in church? The reality is, and we all know this, don't we? Yes, we need to act with grace. We're communities of grace. We need to be ready to forgive one another. But also, we're to uphold justice. And those two things need to be brought together. And I think sometimes our focus has been on the, you know, don't complain, put up with things, you know, show grace. We're all imperfect. We're all sinners. Rather than saying, actually, some behavior is unacceptable and does need to be called out.
Well, I've got this policy template here. How does it work? And then Adrian can ask you some questions about how it might be implemented. It's a template.
I'm coming to it cold, by the way. I've not seen
no,
it.
No, so absolutely.
That's deliberate. I want to be able to kind of, you know, hear it for the first time.
Yeah, of course. So the way the policy works, and I think it's really clear, it's really important to be clear that the policy is not intended to be, you've got to follow it from beginning to end. So the way the policy works is that we would adopt this as a church formally. Obviously, it is a template, and so you can modify it to suit. You need to do some degree of modification to suit. Really and truthfully, I think that the complaint policy in many ways should mostly be used by people who are not part of the core of the church. So, for example, if we have a parent is concerned about something that's going on, they have a mechanism to raise that concern with us. But the complaints policy starts and it works in three stages. In order to justify that, I suppose, very much where we're coming from with the policy is that what we need is justice. And justice means justice for everybody. It is not just when victims are silenced, when victims are prevented from raising concerns, where they're painted as being problematic if we raise concerns. We need to hear that. But also justice means that those claims are looked at faithfully, carefully. And again, this is biblical stuff. We go back into Exodus and we see when there's an allegation made against someone, you don't accept an allegation on the basis of one witness. You need more than one witness. And these things are to be investigated carefully. This is all biblical stuff. There are biblical principles here. There is, of course, just to mention, just for the sake of clarity, there has been a misuse of that two witnesses scenario where claims have been made that, well, if there weren't more than two people who witnessed what happens, we can't bring that. And of course, for example, if we're dealing with child sexual abuse, it's very rare that that is done in a public space. And so we need to be mindful that that needs to be applied with wisdom and with care. But nonetheless, the principle is that we should examine these things, we should look at them, and we should address them fairly. So that's what the complaints policy seeks to do. It seeks to bring a framework in. So the first stage in a complaint is an optional one, but it certainly, in terms of members, would be where we would expect things to start. And this is very much the Matthew 18 principle. It says, let's sit down, let's have a conversation, let's understand what the issues are.
So that's the informal process, stage one.
Yeah. So it's not informal process, it's informal stage. Okay. Now, the difference between those two things, what I'm saying is, this is not informal in the sense that we just sit down over a cup of coffee, we have a chat and we go off again. It's formal because we're raising concerns, we're discussing those concerns, we're going to record that, and then we're going to come up with a solution. But it's quite conceivable in church that someone might raise something with us and we say, actually, yep, we agree with you. That is an area of deficiency within the church. And so what we're going to do is we'll take these steps to address the concerns that you've raised. Mm. And they say, thank you very much. I'm happy with that. That's an informal resolution. We still record it. Mm. We don't write War and Peace about it, but we agree what we're going to do. And then we notify people of whatever change we're going to make, you know, once that's been worked through. So that's informal resolution. So it's not an informal stage. And I think it's important to emphasize that because it still needs to be recorded. It still needs to be dealt with properly. But it is where
so
we
resolve.
It's not
casual in that sense.
It's not casual.
No. Okay.
But it is, you know, let's sit down over a cup of coffee and maybe with scripture in front of us, if that's helpful. Sometimes obviously scripture is not going to help us. You know, if it's that, you know, we need to have the disabled toilet more accessible than it is, that's, you know, not going to be able to look to scripture, but there are nonetheless the principles of scripture that come into those things. But we sit down, we talk that through, and we come to an agreement. Now, at the end of that process, it may be that there isn't agreement. It may be that that person still feels that what we've offered is insufficient, and they can then move to the formal stage. Mm. Now, the formal stage is where we do a more thorough investigation. In other words, there is a dispute here, and we need to come to a decision on that dispute. Now, I think one of the things that's important to say here is that the first stage, the informal resolution, is an optional stage. Now, it is where we would expect church members to start. As a general rule, I'm not talking here where we're talking, you know, high levels of abuse.
You're not talking about criminality.
I'm not talking criminality. Threshold. Correct. Yeah, yeah, correct. Yeah. But where there's a disagreement, we would be hoping that members would be taking that route, because that is the biblical route to take. But obviously, things don't always get resolved at that stage. And sometimes, for whatever reason, people feel they can't go through that informal route. And my suggestion would be that we shouldn't say, well, if you haven't gone through that, you can't bring this forward. Especially if we're talking about people who are perhaps on the periphery of the church or are not members. And so the formal stage comes forward. So a formal complaint is made. The issues are laid out in the complaint. And then those are examined. And the first stage of that examination is, do we think there is something to investigate here? Just because we get a complaint doesn't mean we have to investigate it. But what we should do is look at it to say, is there something that needs looking at here, or is there not? Now, sometimes complaints come forward and we say, look, we already know the answer to this. We've dealt with this. We've worked it through, but this person isn't satisfied. And so we don't have to rework all of that work that's been done. We just give a formal response to it.
How does a church leader then deal with accusations of cover-up in that scenario? Because that sounds to me like a very plausible suggestion, but actually a victim might say, you're just covering this up. You've not dealt with it properly. It's all right for you to say there's nothing to see here, but actually I think there is.
Absolutely. And sometimes what is helpful, and this is where each church needs to work through the policy in its own way, because it has to be workable. But for example, one of the things that we might do is that the informal stage might only involve one leader or perhaps a couple of leaders. When we come to the decision about should this go through into the formal stage, it might be that that would go to a different group altogether. So dependent on the structures that churches have. So, for example, it might not be it might be entirely appropriate, for example, for the first stage of a complaint to go through to deacons rather than to elders, and then that if there's an appeal, that goes to the elders. Or it might be appropriate if the trustees are a different group to the elders, for it to go to the elders in the first instance, and an appeal goes to the trustees. But equally, if you have sufficient elders, it would be entirely reasonable, for example, if you've got a leader who has gone through the process of the informal stage, that's then been escalated, get a different elder or a couple of the elders to have a look at that and deal with that formal stage, excluding obviously anybody against whom the complaint has been raised, but also excluding the person who was involved in the first stage, so someone else looks at that. And then again, you need to be able to make sure that if there is an appeal stage, there are other people who are independent to do that. But the point is that what we're doing is we're looking and saying, is this a justifiable complaint? Of course, whenever we tell somebody that we're not going to uphold a complaint, there is that risk that they will say, well, this is cover up. And therefore, the transparency of that process is really important. And again, different churches will work through in different ways, depending on their legal structures, how they provide accountability and transparency to these processes. But it is important that we're thinking about how can we bring scrutiny into this without breaching confidentiality, but how do we provide scrutiny. And there are various ways of doing that, and it varies dependent on the church structure.
Right, I've got some questions.
Go ahead.
So many. My first is actually for you, Phil. I'm sort of looking over your shoulder, you're hoping for inspiration. It's not going to come. So back in the day when we were introducing safeguarding policies, now pretty well established, I think churches realised the need for those and the importance of them. And they're not just an administrative burden. I remember the FIC didn't produce template documents for us. And the argument went something like this. I was a leader in a different church then. But the argument went something like this. No, individual churches have got to work this through for themselves. They've got to create something that's appropriate for them and for their setting. So why is this different? Why are FIC producing a template for us, whereas before they've not wanted to do that and they've wanted individual churches to think through the issue for themselves?
Well, safeguarding works at a number of levels. So we're looking at children and vulnerable adults to meet those statutory thresholds. This is not something that's to be used to meet a statutory threshold. So when it comes to a safeguarding policy, I think we're dealing in levels of legal process. Therefore, it's really important for a church to consider carefully a safeguarding policy that is pertinent to its own setting. It is worth saying templates are available just from third-party providers.
I know.
CSS would be one example.
Yeah.
But I think that is important because it would be impossible for FIC to come up with a legal document that would be appropriate in all cases.
Okay.
This is all below statutory threshold when we're talking about complaints.
Right.
So this is a thing that is good to have, I think, to help you to serve your people well in the local
right.
church.
That's really helpful. Thank you. Follow-up question to that, which is also for you. Sorry, Paul, you can just have a rest for a minute.
Thank you.
So the follow-up question is also for you, Phil. And well, maybe it is for Paul as well. When we're introducing and reviewing and renewing our safeguarding policies, which we do regularly, and that's really important, we have to fight hard at a church meeting level, elders level as well, if we're honest, for it not to become a box-ticking exercise. You know, here's something, we know we've got to renew it, we know it says in the bottom to be reviewed and renewed, and suddenly you get a 30-page document in front of you, your heart slightly sinks. But you do it because you know it's important to do, you bring it to the church meeting, and the church meeting probably are even less interested in going through the details of it. But we realise it's important, so we've got to fight for it. Have you got wisdom for us as church leaders? How do we take something like this, perhaps in a very happy church where people can't conceive of the being need for complaints, and perhaps people are not kind of reading evangelical press, so that kind of they're not aware of all the things that are going on in the culture. And there's just a sort of sense of, you know, do we really need this? What wisdom can you give us as church leaders, both of you, for how we might introduce this as a topic and get people to see, you know, that actually it is important and it is worth spending some time on. So it's not just a box ticking exercise.
Without wanting to pass the buck, I noted down that exact question to put to Paul. I mean, churches will receive this, sometimes receiving it cold, as Adrian has just been talking about. What are wise ways to introduce this into the kind of suite of policies in the church and give it that level of importance without it feeling, as Adrian says, like a box ticking exercise? What kind of tone do we need to be thinking about? How do we bring this forward? And how do we make it clear, actually, that this is not just put in place so that suddenly a whole barrage of complaints can be raised and can come forward? I think all of those are important questions, Paul.
Yeah, they are. They're very important questions. If I can start again with a I suppose in some ways a trivial response, not on a practical level, but on a spiritual level, the more trivial response is, you never realize how much you need this policy until something happens and you need it. Okay. And one of the things that I would want to say, and I want to say this carefully, but we end up being brought into a lot of situations that cost churches money to resolve. Money that's been given for gospel work, not to pay us to look at problems that they've had. And really and truthfully, if they just had a proper process in the first place, they wouldn't have got into the mess that they had. And so part of my answer is, you might find it a bind to introduce it, but trust me, if something goes wrong, you will spend a lot more time than you would dealing with the policy, particularly given that there is that template policy. So you're not starting from scratch. You've got the template policy in place. It's a lot easier than if you do have these kinds of problems coming.
And it's worth saying, we try to make it as easy as possible. So for example, the policy says insert church name at the top. Once you put that name in, it then maps through the entire policy.
How long is it, Phil?
And the policy has got 17 pages, but that includes kind of template letters to help with the process and that kind of thing. So actually, from page 8 onwards, it is sort of the process you might follow. The policy itself is kind of finished by page 7. So it's not hugely onerous, and it does include all those kind of templates, which is helpful. We've tried to make it as easy as possible for churches.
And of course, it's not one of those policies that everybody's got to memorize. You know, when we're talking safeguarding, there are certain things that people need to be aware of and they need to be acting on all the time.
Like when to report, those kind of things.
But when we're talking about a complaint policy, so long as people can recognize when there is a complaint, and of course, there are different kinds of complaints, which is the other thing. There's a complaint, there's an allegation, there's whistleblowing. These are slightly different things
and
to
are they all,
each other.
Referred to in the policy, are they?
All of them are defined. And I think it's important to say that this is about complaints. This is not about allegations, which again meet that statutory safeguarding threshold. It's not about whistleblowing, which is a slightly different thing again. Again, all defined in the policy. This is about complaints raised about an activity in the church or somebody in the church, those kind of things that don't reach that level. That's fair, isn't it?
And that's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Can I answer my own question?
Can I attempt to answer it as well? I think this is a way we love each other in the local church.
And I think
that's how I would encourage church leaders to bring this forward.
Okay.
What does it look like to love one another? Well, it actually means we listen well to each other. Yeah. And this is a process that will help us to do that if we ever need it. But just to echo what Paul said at the beginning, not a week goes by when I don't have a conversation where I include the phrase, it's not a problem till it is.
Okay. My answer is slightly longer, but I think it's the same.
Yeah.
So I've got in front of me our church handbook, which is given to all church members. We try to make it relatively straightforward. And we have as part of that what we call a covenant of care.
Yes.
Which is that the care that we exercise towards one another. It's principles. It's not heavy on detail, it's principles. And we've got one section, mutual responsibilities, how we look after one another. We've got one short section, responsibilities of the people towards the elders. It's important that we care for our leaders. And a last section, responsibilities of elders to the people. So these are principles about how we care for one another and love one another. So it is loving one another, but actually it's slightly more explicit and worked out. And there's an interesting line here, or a little phrase, we agree that in matters of conflict, we will submit ourselves to the principles of biblical wisdom as expressed in a number of different places and as expressed in the church's dispute resolution procedures, which could now say, and as expressed in the complaints policy.
Absolutely.
So actually, this is not the only thing.
No.
And I think actually, if church life becomes, to me, it seems anyway, as an elder, if church life is just driven by policies, a bit like going to work for a, you know, British Telecom or whoever, it becomes very cold and unfeeling, and actually loses it the biblical commands, I think, however well the policies are written. So actually what I quite like, this wasn't written by me, it was written by Johnny and one of my colleagues, and I really like it because it sets it in a wider context. And I think actually if churches haven't got documents like this, just implementing policies, it's a good thing to do, but it's just slightly cold and detached. Is that a fair assessment, Paul?
I think it is. And at the end of the day, we're calling it a policy, but what it is just a framework for how do we do this well. Again, just on a very practical level, quite often we get into conversations with churches where things have just got really out of hand. And actually, if we just stopped at the beginning and thought, okay, what are the key things that we need to think through here? We could have avoided a lot of that. So often, and I'm going to parrot something that Phil says to me on a fairly frequent basis, is, you know, so often these things are about communication. It's breakdowns in communication. And this is just about giving us a framework to do that. But where if people feel they're not being heard, there is something that they can go to say, you know, this is what we have committed to as a church. And I think just to go at a slightly different point, Adrian, but just to go to what you were saying there about the covenant of care and it fits within a broader context. This is absolutely about how we care for each other, how we love each other, how we express that in a context where we are submitting to scripture. We recognize that we're all sinners and that things go wrong in churches and we sometimes have to sort these things out. But what you said there about that, I think is true of safeguarding. And this is one of the big messages that we try to push through. Safeguarding is about how we care for each other. That's what safeguarding is. It has a particular focus on how we care for those who are not able to protect themselves and not able to defend themselves. But scripture also has a great deal to say about how we protect those.
So when you present your safeguarding, and I've done this, you present your safeguarding policy to the church, you don't present it as, oh, here's another box we've got to tick. Present it as, here's one of the ways that we fulfill our divine calling. Yeah. And actually, we should see our safeguarding policy as part of our worship to God.
Yes.
As much as, you know, putting together a fancy service with some nice songs. Actually, we serve God. We give ourselves to God by protecting his little ones. And, that's good. Can I just ask another very practical, we're drawing towards the end. I want to ask another practical question. This is, I've got it here in front of me, my church handbook. This is an internal document. And I can see how that can link through very neatly. It could fit in very neatly. Lovely. You talked at the beginning about how this is for people outside of the church as well. So wisdom for me, we have a safeguarding page on our website and we put our safeguarding policy there and we talk about the importance of safeguarding and the principles. Would this be a similar thing to do to put it in? I mean, you know, how do people coming along to the mother and toddler group know about this?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to give it to them as they walk through the door.
Of course. No, you don't. And what we would say, and again, if I can broaden it slightly, because I think this is true for safeguarding generally. And I think if we see this in the context of that broader safeguarding, I think that's a helpful way to see it. There is the policy, there's the procedure, all those kinds of things. Really important that we have those in place. But actually, the most important thing is the culture that we create. Mm. And what we're encouraging churches to do is to create an environment where we say, look, keeping people safe, keeping everybody safe is a really high priority for us as a church. We value that. We want to love people well. And if we're doing something that is difficult for you, if we're doing something that doesn't feel right to you, please come and talk to us about that. And in a very upfront way, you know, here's the people that you can contact if you've got concerns and what have you. And I think the other thing is, and of course, if we've got concerns, we will come and talk to you as well. And so we create this very open culture where these aren't special things that we only deal with in the most extreme cases, but this is how we care for each other. This is how we love each other. Now, I'm phrasing this in a way that I hope we relate to, but all of this is entirely consistent. And what we work on quite hard at CSS is trying to combine the legal requirements and the regulatory requirements with the biblical perspective. And we're very much of the opinion that actually, if we follow scripture, we will exceed the standards that the state sets us for. Yeah. And scripture tells us, doesn't it, to do everything for the glory of God. Yes. And if we're doing everything, that includes the way that we do these things.
Our work in this area should be exemplary, shouldn't it? We should be leading the way.
And I think historically, historically, that's where the church has been on social justice issues, isn't it? The church has always led the way. And yet it feels as though over more recent decades, we've actually stepped away from that a little bit and have been following. And of course, we want to learn from best practice. We want to learn from the stake, but we do want to make sure that we're shaping things from scripture. Yeah. And so creating that culture. And to me, that goes even further. So for example, one of the things I think that we're all very familiar with is codes of conduct, particularly when we're working with children and young people, perhaps when we're working with vulnerable adults. But I think that one of the things that's really important for us in this whole area is to set clear expectations. There's the covenant that you've got, the covenant of care for members that you were referring to, Adrian, really, really helpful. But then there's a whole range of other things. If we have a policy, let's say, for example, we have a code of conduct for our youth workers, and that says this shouldn't happen. Let's just pluck something out the air. Youth leaders should not make personal social media contact with young people. Okay, fairly standard rule, not a blanket rule. There are various contexts, but let's imagine that's what our policy says. Now, that's fine. The leaders know that. And if a leader becomes aware that another leader has breached that, they can challenge that. But how does the young person know that that shouldn't happen? If we don't talk to the young person about the code of conduct, they don't know that that's our rule. And so why would they come and tell us if someone is breaching it? And so we need to communicate that. But then we need to go another step further, because what we need to say is, let's say we've got a youth group. Let's say it's sort of a senior school age kid. So typically speaking, 11 through 16. Some of the 16-year-olds might come and say to us, well, you know, that's a bit daft, isn't it? We all know that. And, you know, if some 40-year-old guy starts trying to make contact with me on social media, I'm just going to, you know, just going to decline it. But what we need to think about is, okay, so you've got that level of awareness, but what about the younger ones in the group? And actually, the way that we care for each other is we're mindful of the standards that we've set for ourselves. And if we see a breach of those standards, it's not just you can raise it, but actually you should raise it, because it's in raising it that we that we care for one another. And we
So we avoid making assumptions about people, essentially, don't we? And we do that in pastoral care all the time.
Of course.
We just need to extend that to everything, that we don't assume that, you know, the very fact we have a policy, we don't assume everything's going to be all right.
No.
But we don't assume that everybody knows everything about everything. Phil, I want it. Tell me how I can get hold of it. Yeah, how much will it cost me?
It's available. It's free of charge. So FIC.
Free of charge.
We have recognised the importance of this for churches as we see it. We've invested in this. So we want to make it available free of charge to churches. As we've said, there is work for you to do on it. It is a template. It's not the final piece of information. But this is available now. We'll put a link to it in the show notes of the podcast. And we commend it to
what
you.
What about if I'm not an FIC church?
You can still have it, because we love people and we want you to get it right.
Okay.
So there
if
we
I'm
are.
Not an FIC church,
you can
still
have
free?
It. Yep, still free of charge, because we want to be generous. But join FIC would be the follow-up to that. If you're an independent church, we want you to join. But we recognise that it won't be limited to FIC churches. And Paul and I have had that conversation already. So I'm not breaching his kindness in any way, shape or form. Paul, Adrian, thank you so much for talking through this important topic. I commend the complaints policy to you. It is available now. And we hope it will be useful to you and your church. Adrian, Paul, thanks very much for being with me.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
This has been Independence, the FIEC podcast. Do rate and review so others can find it, and we'll talk to you again soon.